It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. A new Broadway play honors the men who died at the Upper Big Branch mine disaster 10 years ago.
We feel a tremendous sense of responsibility, right? I mean, these folks trusted us with their stories, and they trusted us to carry their stories out into the world.
Coming up, we hear more from the play's creators. This is West Virginia Morning. And Ohio Valley states begin to reopen their economies amid still rising coronavirus cases, one sector that's been particularly hit hard is the meatpacking industry. More than 480 Kentucky meatpacking workers have gotten sick. As Liam Niemeyer reports, these meatpacking plants are being mandated to stay operating, but plant workers say not enough is being done to protect them from the virus.
It's the uncertainty that gets to Darlene Davis, the uncertainty of when she'll see her elderly mother in person again, the uncertainty of her co-workers' health, the uncertainty of this new coronavirus. Davis says that uncertainty became fear for many of her co-workers at the GBS Swift meatpacking plant in Louisville when a fellow worker died of the virus early last month.
Everyone was upset because we worked close with them, and they was just scared, not knowing the unknown, and then having someone that you work so closely with to pass away.
Davis is the chief union steward at the plant for the United Food and Commercial Workers Local 227. It's a union that represents workers at several meatpacking plants across Kentucky and southern Indiana. She says JBS USA didn't immediately tell workers about the death, and she says JBS has not been transparent about positive coronavirus cases at the plant. State health officials say there are at least 67 cases at the plant so far out of the 1,200 workers there.
I try to keep in touch with the ones that are out, checking on them to see how they're doing, if I can, because I don't know if they're going to come back.
And meatpacking plants across the country, including JBS in Louisville, are being mandated by the federal government to stay open, even as COVID-19 cases spike in these type of facilities. JBS and most meatpacking companies say they are checking worker temperatures, placing plastic barriers in between workers, and staggering breaks to reduce worker contact. But union workers in the Ohio Valley say that's still not enough.
But when we go to the production floor, we're within 18 inches of the next person.
That's Jason Wilson, who's a union leader at the Tyson Foods plant in Henderson County, Kentucky. He says workers are still packed together on the production line, even with face masks and plastic barriers.
They got plastic hung in between us, side by side and in front of us. But at the end of the day, will it be enough?
His plant was one of 14 plants across the country that reopened after temporary closures for sanitizing and cleaning. The United Food and Commercial Workers International Union, in a release, said these reopenings were a reckless move because of the inadequate protection and not enough testing. And for some workers, the outbreaks at these plants are being brought back home to their families. Jose Andreas is a production supervisor at the Purdue Farms plant in Ohio County, Kentucky. A Guatemalan native, Andreas has been living in the U.S. through the DREAM Act. He says he tested positive for the virus on April 18th.
By that time, my wife was showing the same symptoms that I had, and we have an eight-month-old baby. So that's just what came rushing to my head was my daughter.
The Purdue Farms plant has the most confirmed COVID-19 cases among all Kentucky meatpacking plants after the state tested all employees there. Andreas was one of the first of 282 cases reported so far.
It was just a scary situation that I wouldn't wish it on anybody, you know.
Andreas and his family recovered, but one worker at his plant did not and died. Worker safety advocates have called on the federal government to issue enforceable safety standards for these plants as they continue operating. But so far, only optional guidance has been given. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Liam Niemeyer.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:48. scattered rain and thunderstorms today with highs in the 70s. Rain and thunderstorms tonight with lows in the 50s and 60s. Tomorrow, partly sunny sky, still scattered rain and thunderstorms, highs in the 70s and low 80s. Support for WVPB is provided by CAMC, specializing in prostate cancer, kidney stones, and incontinence. More at camc.org/CAMC Urology. This year marks the 10th anniversary of the Upper Big Branch mine disaster in Raleigh County, West Virginia, that killed 29 men. The investigation that followed showed that coal output was king. Safety measures in the mine were not. The legacy of this tragedy was given new life in the form of a documentary play called Coal Country. It was presented at the New York Public Theater back in March before theaters in New York City were shut down due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Trey Kay, host of West Virginia Public Broadcasting's show, Us and Them, saw the play, and he met up with the show's co-creators, Jessica Blank and Eric Jensen. This husband and wife team spent years interviewing family members and co-workers of the men who died in the explosion.
The piece started and was conceived of before we were in the political landscape that we were in now. So, and we were in West Virginia doing the interviews during the 2016 West Virginia primary. But, you know, at that point, we had already been working on the piece for a year.
The amazing thing about this story has been going on in rural America since I was a kid. I remember when the first shopping mall came into town and Main Street shut down. That's going on in a lot of these coal towns now because they've become a single industry place. And then once that all goes, you know, the towns start to die. I experienced that in rural Minnesota and watched my town shrink and watch young people move away. And we never experienced anything as horrific as 29 men getting killed in a coal explosion. But
the economic
thing and the lost promise is kind of the same. It feels the same. That's something that I really related to, you know. Around the time we were working on the play too, I lost both my father and my uncle within 2 weeks of each other. They both died of, they say, natural causes. You know, I think the kind of capitalism that we practice actually killed them both. But it happened while we were in the middle of making the play, and I really didn't understand the play until those two men died, and I felt real grief for the first time in my life. And then I multiplied that by 29, and my heart just broke open, you know, and I realized what we were making then.
I got a video of Corey on my computer. He shot it underground to explain to his girlfriend what he'd done every day. That's the last voice I got of him. I guard that computer with my every now and then, I'll fold it open, I'll press the play button, and then I'll watch him pour them water out his boots, because the water was deep, he was wet and working, and that old slang he had that old backwoods holler talk. He poured that shit out his boots and just talk. And I sit there, and I cry from time it starts to time it finishes. You can see I'm covered with him. He's everywhere. He's all over my stuff. That's his truck outside the window. That's his boss hat. Everything's still in the truck. Haven't touched it.
After watching the play, I got a real impact just hearing the stories of these people. I guess I'd like to hear, what was it like contacting these people? What was it like getting their story?
West Virginians are amazing at treating you like your family, you know, unbelievably kind, great storytellers. And it just, you know, a lot of the guys that we talked to reminded me of my uncles. And like, we were obviously talking about something very difficult, but you know, people are more than just their grief. They're filled with warmth and humor and love and caring and all sorts of other things.
We're looking for, yeah, for the heart, for the three-dimensionality, for the humanity. And we know from our experience making this kind of work that once we're connected to a story and meet the real people. And if their stories make it into the play, we're connected to those people for life. So it's not like we go in, get the story, and leave. There's a whole other thing that happens. So when we're sitting down with folks, you know, our interviews are usually 4 or 5 hours long. It's not a single-sided conversation. We're sharing with them also, right? It's a human encounter.
But during that 4 hours, I guess I just would like to know a little bit about that. I mean, I would imagine that it has peaks and valleys, and you get... I just thought you had an allergy, but you're crying.
No, I was crying last night.
He's been tearing up since the play opened.
It's just like, I'm really glad the play opened and that it's receiving so much attention, because I keep thinking about these 29 guys. You know, coal miners helped build America. You know, and right now they're having to stop trains with their bodies so they can get their benefits or get their last paycheck. You know, they helped build this country. We should treat them like they did. You know, I don't care what side of the environmental thing you're on when it comes to that. Like it or not, you know, the iPhone that you're holding, if there's steel in it, that steel was melted with coal, you know. And they helped build the buildings in our cities and helped build the country. And, you know, they're not the problem, you know. And just... the way that these men were treated bothers me too. You know, it's an undignified way to be treated, I think. It makes me sad. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that.
Including previews, Coal Country ran for about 25 performances before the Public Theater closed down, along with every other theater in New York City. The production got positive write-ups. Jessica and Eric still have plans for the production. They want to present the play to audiences in Coal Country. They want the families of the miners who died in the Upper Big Branch to witness the telling.
Well, a lot of West Virginians have come and have grabbed me and touched me and grabbed my hand, and sometimes just with a nod of the head and sometimes with a long post have told us that we've gotten West Virginia right. You know, none of the families have come yet. I suspect that we're on the track to having gotten it right, but, you know, that's really going to be up to them.
I mean, I think we feel a tremendous sense of responsibility, right? I mean, these folks trusted us with their stories, and they trusted us to carry their stories out into the world.
And the stories of their men.
And right, and the stories of the men that they lost out into the world. And so, you know, it's just really important to us that we get it right.
We've been listening to an excerpt of the latest episode of our podcast, Us and Them, titled Legacy of the Upper Big Branch Disaster. A key part of the Coal Country play was its soundtrack, which became, by the way, of an onstage appearance by singer-songwriter Steve Earle, who served as the show's Greek chorus. The Grammy Award-winning musician has taken songs from this play and produced them into a new album called The Ghosts of West Virginia, which will be released on May 22nd. Here's a special acoustic version of a song from the play and album.
Well, I've lived here all my life. I don't know why I'm still surprised. The sunset comes so early to this valley. And if I'm now on my toes, the twilight comes and goes. And I'm all alone with darkness all around. If I could see your face again, black with coal and Tio Grande, cuss like sunshine through the shadow of the mountain. I'd drop everything and run, like I know I should have done, every time you come home to me in the evening.
You can hear more from Steve Earle's new album on the latest episode of Us and Them. Download the show wherever you get your podcasts or listen online at wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Brittany Patterson produces our show. Our news director is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.